Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Winning's hard. Really, really hard.
Monday edition of the Winning is Hard podcast. Cameron Barker, Westcott Evers back for you after a Texas bye week that featured a lot of big teams in the Big 12 in action, including Kansas State, who is this week's Texas opponent. Well, they beat Oklahoma State 48-0 with their backup quarterback, Will Howard. And meanwhile, TCU, they also improved to 8-0, knocking off West Virginia by 10 points. Little concern after the Oklahoma State loss, Westcott, about the last four games going in, and this past weekend did not improve that.
Yeah, I think the finishing schedule was looking difficult when we did our podcast last week. I think it looks even more difficult now, especially in consideration to how Oklahoma State played against Texas. They were extremely out of sorts in Manhattan on Saturday. They got behind early. They weren't able to come back. They were missing their top running back, Dominic Richardson, but that certainly doesn't account for the way that Kansas State was able to do what they wanted offensively and really limited Oklahoma State defensively in a way that that Texas wasn't able to do. And then if you look at the Texas Tech game, played Baylor, lost 45-17 at home. Their quarterback situation was awful. Baron Morton, the freshman, really struggled, 11 of 34, three interceptions. Tyler Shough came in the game. He attempted two passes, threw an interception. Donovan Smith, who beat Texas, has since been benched, was 0 for 2 and threw an interception of his own. No Texas game this weekend, but just from my perspective, it was a little bit frustrating that Texas lost to two teams that are, played pretty poor football on Saturday.
Yeah, and really exposed just how bad this Texas team has been on the road. The two losses in Big 12 play this season, Texas Tech, the three-point loss in overtime, and then, of course, the seven-point loss last week to Oklahoma State, where we're basically seeing two different teams on the field when they're at home and on the road. Beat West Virginia by 18 in their home opener in the Big 12. Then we're able to beat Iowa State barely. Now looking back at it, you wonder, well, maybe Texas probably should have lost that game if not for Xavier Hutchinson dropping what could have been a touchdown, or at least setting up a touchdown. So the concerns for Sark's performance on the road, he's 1-6 in Big 12 play on the road. If you want to throw in the OU games, he's 2-7, including the Red River Showdown. But now you got to figure out what your issue has been on the road against a Kansas State team who just put up 48 on a team you lost to. And even with or without Adrian Martinez, it's a night game in Manhattan.
Yeah. And, one thing, we'll get into the Kansas State preview a little bit more on Wednesday, but one thing to just really quickly point out, Texas has seen Will Howard the past several years due to injuries to Skylar Thompson, has had a few moments where he looked competent, but kind of struggled in those games. He's playing good football for the Wildcats right now. He's really matured a lot in the last several years, and that's a big boost for the Wildcats to be able to get that type of play out of their backup quarterback. Not entirely dissimilar to some of the performances that Texas got from Hudson Card that were quite good earlier this season.
Any word on whether or not Adrian Martinez will be good to go?
He has a knee injury. I'm not sure if Chris Kleeman said anything about it today, or if there's any timetable for that injury. They did say that Martinez was a game time decision against Oklahoma State. Sark said during his Monday press conference that they are preparing for both quarterbacks to play. If Adrian Martinez was a game time decision against Oklahoma State on Saturday, I think that there's a strong chance that he could play. But of course, you know, the running ability for Martinez is such a big part of his game that if that knee's not fully healthy and he doesn't have his full level of mobility, then I think Kansas State would certainly benefit from playing Will Howard, and that would be my expectation.
And for Texas injuries, of course, no Anthony Cook. He's broken arm, right?
Broken forearm, yeah.
Broken forearm. Now,
Sark hasn't really ruled him out. You know, as we noted last week, he did say that, you know, guys have been able to play with casts on when they have broken bones. My expectation is that he won't play this coming week. But Texas also should be able to get Ryan Watts close to more full health. And then, you know, any other assorted players that were banged up. Jalen Gilbo had to leave that game against Oklahoma State. There may have been Hayden Connor as well dealing with that stinger issue. You know, after 8 weeks, straight weeks of football, I'm sure that there are some other, you know, knocks for players. And, you know, also the, you know, the fingernail of Quinn Ewers should have had a chance to improve because, you know, I think that really had a big impact on his play. Just, you know, going back and watching the game a third time and just how off he looked. Just really, really surprising from him. And so I think that, you know, that injury played a much larger role than anyone was willing to admit publicly.
You said you watched the game three times now?
Well, including the first watch, yeah.
Oh, man. What's your takeaways? Any new takeaways following the third time watching that game?
Yeah, I thought that I'd done the second rewatch a little bit, a little bit fast, trying to get ready for last week's show. And I thought there's you know, a big no call where Bijan Robinson was running a route in the fourth quarter when Texas got into the red zone. I thought it should have been a pass interference penalty. I thought one of the penalties on the pass interference penalty on Deshaun Jameson was pretty weak. And I thought the hold on, you know, the scramble that Quinn Ewers had was pretty weak as well. The type of call that, you know, could be made on a lot of plays in football games.
With Quinn Ewers and his injury, did Sark say anything today about that? I know a big topic of discussion was Ewers' performance, whether or not he should have been pulled for Hudson Card, and just the fingernail injury that he sustained before Oklahoma State, the reason why he was wearing a glove in pregame warmups.
Yeah, there wasn't anything concrete from Sark on that. Mostly he was just talking about you know, kind of the general thing about how quarterbacks get too much blame when they lose and you know, too much credit when they win. I'm not sure that was really the case in that game. Certainly, you know, the penalties were a big deal. The inability to get off the field on third down and take away the middle of the field in the passing game were big. But, you know, if Quinn Ewers played at the level that we've seen from him in other games when he's healthy, I think Texas wins that football game against Oklahoma State.
And Sark mentioned today that he has to do a better job as the play caller, and the play caller receives blame for that loss, and that he probably should have ran the ball more. From watching it the couple of times you have, when your offense is struggling to run block in the second half after having a great first half where it seems like Oklahoma State could not stop Bijan and Roshan, then you get to the second half and you only finish with 50 yards on the ground.
Yeah. You know, Sark specifically said that, you know, he didn't think that he called the right running plays. You know, there were a few times where Texas threw the ball on first down late in that game. I think, you know, beyond his self-assessment of wanting to use different running plays, you know, I thought it was a little bit frustrating that he didn't give Quinn Ewers a few easier passes to complete. And I thought maybe if, you know, they maybe run some screen passes or given Jatavion Sanders a look over the middle of the field, that may have given Quinn Ewers a better chance of completing some of those passes, even you know, with the fingernail injury that he was dealing with. But I thought the difficulty level of some of those throws that he was asking to make was just, you know, way too much. And even though I, you know, didn't really think that Sark should have pulled Quinn Ewers in that game, just as a general philosophy of how to deal with young quarterbacks. I think that, you know, how injured he looked with his inaccuracy, you know, if Sark was down on the field and didn't think that Ewers was healthy enough to be able to complete passes, then I think that would have been cause for him to pull Ewers from the game in favor of Hudson Card. And, you know, obviously, you know, again, that's something that they wouldn't admit to publicly, but just based on what Ewers put on film, I think, you know, there's a strong chance that he just wasn't physically capable of being able to go out and performing in that game.
Looking at the Big 12 standings right now, Texas dropped to fifth after this weekend because not playing in the bye week. So TCU 5-0, K-State second 4-1, Oklahoma State, Baylor, and Texas all at 3-2. Texas still to play Baylor, and then Oklahoma and Kansas behind them 2-3. Texas Tech 2-3 as well, and then West Virginia 1-4, and Oklahoma State 0-5. I asked you last week if Texas was, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, if Texas was a top four team in the Big 12. Are they? Would you say they're a top three team, or is fifth right around where you think they belong?
I would probably, with the way that Quinn Ewers played, you know, if he's not capable of throwing the football, you know, with the accuracy that he typically has, then, you know, I think Texas is probably closer to the five range. Coming off a bye week, being able to get healthy after that, you know, 2 months straight of football games every Saturday, I would probably lean maybe closer to third or maybe fourth right now. But, you know, I think I probably wouldn't go as high as third, just because of the issues that Texas has had winning football games on the road and not being able to close out opponents.
Baylor 2 wins in a row. They took care of Texas Tech this past weekend, as you mentioned. So now the top four teams in the Big 12, Texas going to finish against four of those in the last 5 weeks, including the loss last week to Oklahoma State. So Kansas State, TCU back-to-back weeks. I think you get Kansas and then Baylor the day after Thanksgiving. So we're going to learn a lot about this Texas team in the next 4 weeks. And Westcott, I'm just concerned that the injuries in the secondary and the lack of depth are really going to come back to bite Texas in the second half of the schedule.
Yeah. I mean, you know, talking about one of the guys who's a little bit banged up, Jaren Thompson, has been wearing, you know, one of those shoulder harnesses for a couple of weeks. He should be a little bit more healthy, but questionable about whether Texas will get Anthony Cook back, what a cast would look like for him and his ability to tackle. Really the leader on the back end for Texas has played a ton of football. And as we talked about last week, when we were wrapping up the Oklahoma State game, you know, just some real limitations when you start looking at some of the guys that come in, walk on Michael Taft, only a redshirt freshman, certainly, you know, mature guy that really seems to understand his assignments, much more athletic, more experienced player in Keaton Crawford, struggling, you know, with his coverages and knowing where he's supposed to be. So, you know, Sark mentioned on Monday that he thought last week was a big week for some of the younger players. You know, certainly the safety position is a spot where it would be nice for some of the highly recruited young players. J.D. Coffey is a guy that we haven't really seen much of yet in his Texas career. Now in his second season, I believe that he was the top 150 prospect, the number 10 safety in the 2021 recruiting class. And then, you know, B.J. Allen hasn't made an appearance yet this season. So guys that Texas could really maybe use to step up there. To give them some options beyond Keaton Crawford and Michael Taft there on the back end next to Jaren Thompson.
Do you know if B.J. Allen or Larry Turner Gooden have burned their red shirts yet?
B.J. Allen hasn't appeared in a single game yet.
Okay. I know Turner Gooden has played in some special teams, but I don't know.
Yeah, Turner Gooden played in the Louisiana Monroe game, but he hasn't been on the field since then. You know, while we're on that topic, Brandon Thompson is now at 4 appearances. So if he plays this weekend, he would burn his red shirt. Savion Redd burned his red shirt in the Oklahoma State game. DJ Campbell now has three appearances. He's likely to have his fourth against Kansas State with, you know, his move up the depth chart and into the rotation along the offensive line. And those are the big ones. Lance St. Louis also burned his red shirt. That was, of course, completely expected since he's taken over the long snap duties over the last month plus. Red has now burned his red shirt, and the coaches also have a decision to make about Terrence Brooks. They may be leaning towards a red shirt for him. If he hasn't made significant strides, he's sitting at four games now and didn't play against Oklahoma State after appearing in the games against Oklahoma and Iowa State.
I like what we saw out of Brennan Thompson, just a one catch on that receiver screen, but showed his burst. You know, he's got track speed, was an exceptional track athlete in high school. And I would love to see him, you know, get more involved in the offense. I mean, that catch was just 32 yards, but more than Ajayi Hall, Savion Redd, or even Troy O'Meary have had combined this season.
Yeah, certainly a flash of the explosiveness from Brennan Thompson there. Just, simple screen pass, easy way to get him the ball. Another way that Texas could also use him, that Quinn Ewers ended up missing in the Oklahoma game as another deep threat next to Xavier Worthy that Texas has been missing since Isaiah Nair went down in preseason camp. So I think of all the wide receivers, with Casey Kane struggling, I think Thompson has the most capability of being able to help Texas out down the stretch. Sark was asked about the third wide receiver position on Monday. And, he really said that they're seeking consistency from those guys and noted that they haven't really been getting it. I think for a guy like Brennan Thompson, just being able to get to a point, where he can go out there and execute at a reasonably high level for 10 or 12 plays. With Sark really pointing out the ability of to use multiple personnel groups to avoid having to use that third wide receiver, it doesn't give me a lot of hope for what things will look like down the stretch for somebody really stepping into that role. But I think if someone does right now, I would lean towards Brennan Thompson as the most likely player out of that group to be able to step forward a little bit just because of his dynamic speed.
Looking back at the other Big 12 teams, TCU, Max Duggan, 341 yards, Westcott. He's thrown 22 touchdowns and just two interceptions. I mean, he looks like a completely different player than the freshman Max Duggan.
Well, he looks like the type of player that we've seen against Texas in the last couple of seasons when he's played some of his best football, against the Longhorns. So it was always kind of interesting to see the perception of Max Duggan, including from some TCU fans, when what Texas fans have seen out of him is, what he's doing right now consistently.
College football playoff comes out tomorrow. What's your predictions from the top four?
I think Tennessee, Georgia, Ohio State, probably Michigan in there. I think maybe only two conferences in that grouping right now.
Would you put TCU, five or six, or do you still think they're kind of back in top 10 team?
Yeah, I'd probably put them five or six.
Looking at TCU's schedule, they closed. So Texas Tech this week at Texas, which is going to be a 6:30 night game on ABC. That'll be fun. And then at Baylor, Iowa State. So, if they can get by Texas, they could, end up undefeated. They looked against Oklahoma State, who might be in the Big 12 title game. Oklahoma State didn't even look – well, that's Kansas State. Sorry, Oklahoma State didn't look like they even belonged in the field against Kansas State with a backup quarterback. Any other takeaways from Sark's presser or the bye week?
He said that Texas has been practicing well. I'm not sure if that really means a whole lot, given that he typically says that, during the week. He did say that there are some guys who have been coming on. DJ Campbell, a guy who had some nice plays when he came in against Oklahoma State, and I think, could really challenge either Cole Hudson or Hayden Connor, depending on, how healthy Connor is down the stretch with those stinger issues. Cam Williams progressing, Jaden Blue at the running back position, coming off of sitting out last season as a senior. He's a guy who has been involved and has burned his red shirt. Jure Bledsoe on the defensive line. And Malik Murphy continues to come on as well. So, solid progress from the freshman quarterback for Texas who, may have a really difficult time getting on the field for the Longhorns, being sandwiched in between Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning, who now we know publicly will enroll early in January.
And Arch has yet to throw an interception this high school season, right?
I'm not sure about that.
I believe so.
I think that's right. Yeah.
I think he's at 30 touchdowns and zero interceptions on the year, which is really good for a high school quarterback. 20 touchdowns, zero interceptions.
Yeah, some strong decision making from Arch Manning. That's good to see. Concerns about the competition level continue with him, but he's really taking care of his business this season for Newman.
Do you think by the end of the season we'll see DJ Campbell starting?
I think there's a solid chance of that. I think at the least I would expect to continue to see him rotate in, which is kind of unusual. Most offensive line coaches don't really have much of a rotation at all. They want to have their five starters in there. They want them to take as many reps as possible in practice and during games. So, really strong sign for the developmental trajectory of DJ Campbell as we get late into the season. And, certainly based on his pedigree and the expectations for him, that's not particularly surprising, but a good sign for the Longhorns moving forward.
Sark did say there was a spark at practice, which take that however you want to take it. At least he's not saying practice was bad. I mean, I'm not sure how many coaches would come out and say that publicly, but between him and Jimbo, the Monday tradition is we had a great practice.
Yeah, I think there's only been a couple times where Sark admitted publicly that he wasn't happy with how their Longhorns were practicing.
Texas basketball?
Texas basketball had a scrimmage against Arkansas on Saturday. I was not at that game. I was frustrated when I realized that exhibition game was on a Saturday because I did not want to work on Saturday. So I was hanging out watching college football, but we can talk about a few clips that we saw from the game and some of the stats. Texas won that 90-60, really blew Arkansas out of the water in the second half, a 50-30 advantage after taking a 10-point lead into halftime. On the scoreboard, Artario Morris, the freshman guard, led the team with 19 points, 6 of 9 shooting, 4 of 6 from 3. Big development there for Texas. If his shooting is farther along than expected, overall Texas was 10 out of 16. Not a ton of attempts, but they were efficient with the ones that they did take. Brock Cunningham made both of his attempts. Tyrese Hunter hit 2 of his 4 attempts. Positive shooting developments for Texas there, certainly. Shot 54.1% across the board. And maybe one of my big standout numbers from the game, two of them really, Texas forced 23 turnovers. They scored 26 points off those turnovers, and they scored 17 fast break points. Chris Beard, reiterated on Thursday when we talked with him in the new Texas basketball practice facility there next to the Moody Center, that they do want to be able to play faster this year. They were able to go out and do that. The speed and athleticism of Tyrese Hunter, I think are a really huge addition for Texas and being able to do that. And then having the finishing ability of Dylan Mitchell, whether it's on the fast break or being able to move off the ball. He is extremely efficient, 5 out of 6, had 5 rebounds, was active on the offensive glass. He also had 4 fouls and 3 turnovers. So his decision-making and ability to stay out of foul trouble, I think will be something to watch with him early in his career. But a positive debut for Dylan Mitchell, for Artario Morris, and a strong performance against an Arkansas team You know, they have some reasonably high expectations coming into this season, but they're also pretty young. And you know, Eric Musselman admitted afterwards that, you know, they hadn't been practicing particularly well. So, you know, I think Arkansas will be a much better team at the end of the season than they are now. I think this exhibition game was an indicator that they're going to have some growing pains. So, you know, I don't want to take too much of this performance, but, you know, I think Texas took care of business, accomplished what they needed to accomplish. And, you know, I think they're going to blow out a lot of these really poor opponents that they have on another questionable non-conference schedule from Chris Beard.
Yeah, Arkansas came in ranked number 10 in the country. They're going to have a really good team by March. Obviously not where they're at, where they want to be at right now, but really impressed with Dylan Mitchell. I think you mentioned the foul trouble, the turnovers. There's going to be some growing pains for sure, but his ability to run the floor is really impressive. He's fun to watch. And then Tyrese Hunter's ability to run the point guard and allow Marcus Guard to shift back into that two guard combo guard spot where he was at Minnesota, I think will be huge for Texas. He doesn't have to have the ball in his hands nonstop. Hunter can run the offense. And then if you can shoot over 50% from three-point land and on the floor, you're probably going to win most games no matter who you're playing. So, you know, tough to tell. It's been one game. Is Texas going to be shooting this well from this, from the three-point line the entire year? Is it just an anomaly?
No, they're not going to shoot 62.5%.
They're not? Okay.
This year. No, they're...
No. And then Jabari Rice, I like what I saw out of him too, Westcott. I think another good guard athlete. So I'm a little bit excited about what this Texas team can do going forward. I think this team will be a little bit better than last year. And just they having that tournament experience and just kind of getting that first tournament win. I know it's a new coaching staff, a lot of new players, but it just felt like the monkey on the back for so long with this basketball program.
Yeah, Tyrese Hunter played extremely well in the NCAA tournament as Iowa State went to the Sweet 16 last year. Jabari Rice comes in. I'll probably call him Jabari Smith about 20 times this year.
Yep. I probably just did it. And I don't even remember.
Yeah, he's a guy that has, you know, a fair amount of tournament experience playing, you know, at New Mexico State under Chris Jans. And I think Dylan Disu, you know, didn't have a big impact. 2 out of 2 shooting, 5 rebounds, you know, had some foul trouble, committed 3 fouls, but you know, I think he should be much more healthy and just having a little bit more size and rebounding ability out there will take some of the pressure off Christian Bishop and just allow Texas to match up better with some of the bigger teams that they face on the schedule. There is one thing that I wanted to bring up that you haven't really got a lot of clarity from Chris Beard about, but you know, after the arrest of Arterio Morris this summer and the allegations that were made of some physical violence and some threatening behavior by him, it's really disappointing that Texas hasn't suspended him. Beard told us that he had sent that to the Title IX department, but it's not really clear why he hasn't taken any action himself. In my opinion, Morris shouldn't have been playing in the exhibition game. I don't think that he should be playing in the early games this season. I think that type of behavior is worthy of a suspension of 3 to 5 games. So, you know, the first real insight into how Chris Beard is dealing with violence towards women by one of his players. And it's an extremely disappointing response.
Yeah, I think the 19 points in the 4 or 6 from 3-point land tells you why Chris Beard didn't want him suspended.
Yeah. You know, I think that, you know, that just that makes it worse. And you know, hopefully we get a chance to talk to Chris Beard later this week. And, you know, it's something that, you know, I would like to be able to ask him about. But again, just, you know, extremely disappointing the lack of discipline from the Texas basketball program, you know, after that arrest of Arterio Morris this summer.
First game for Texas, November 7th against UTEP. They're pretty familiar with the head coach at UTEP. It's the same guy who beat Chaka Smart in the tournament a few years back, Abilene Christian's head coach. What's his last name again?
Golding.
Yeah, Jay Golding, right?
I think it might be Tim Golding.
Tim Golding, Jay. I'm getting names all wrong, but either way, they open up. Have you been to the Moody Center yet?
Yeah, we went in there, Joe Golding. We went in there for practice. Back in early August. It's a great looking facility. And, you know, nice to have some of the areas that that the beat writers moved through just a little bit nicer than the Irwin Center. I think they even have functioning clocks in there.
It's a good question. I was there for the women's basketball game and I love the sound. It radiates throughout the building. I mean, it was probably like 25% filled. I think they had the top deck, not really roped off, but closed off. And it sounded loud as a Frank Irwin Center did towards the end of the season, or it feels like a sellout, which I think is going to be huge because Texas has never really had a home field advantage, right? With the sound. And even when you have a decent sized crowd, it's just kind of, you know, it's felt like a cocktail party at times. I think, what did Brian Davis call it? A wine and cheese crowd.
there were a few times, you know, when I first came to school, at Texas in 2002, there were a lot of really good crowds for that team that ended up going to the Final Four. And, you know, through kind of towards the rest of that decade, you know, had the group that went to the Elite Eight that lost to LSU, the group that lost to Memphis. There were some good crowds during that time. But, you know, after they kind of fell off towards the end of the Rick Barnes era, you know, the crowds were tended to be a lot smaller, not particularly engaged. And Shaka Smart, you know, didn't do a great job and with his outreach to students or the general fan base or with his results on the court. So I thought it was definitely an improvement last year. But I think probably the one thing that I'm most excited about is just having the students around the court and you know, for them to be able to have a bigger impact. I think one of the best things that Chris Beard has done is his efforts to form relationships with those students, to have them be involved in the program. And, you know, I think that what he's been doing over the last year and a half in that regard, we should really start to see that really pay off a week from now, the first regular season basketball game for the men at Moody Center.
Yeah, they've named the student section the Corral, I think, and there seems to be a really good student interest in this fan base from Beard, which is good because, like you mentioned, the Frank Irwin Center has not really had a home court advantage. It seems like maybe once or twice a year you get a decent crowd, maybe after a few a win streak or maybe a big game, but some big games for Texas on the schedule. Gonzaga, that's November 16th. They play Stanford, this in Dallas for the Pac-12 Big 12 Challenge. And then they play up in New York for the Jimmy Fee Classic, Illinois. And I think maybe Duke is involved in that tournament as well. But again, not a tough non-conference schedule like Chris Beard wants to have it.
Yeah. I mean, I think he kind of likes to play his friends like Joe Golding and likes to be able to rack up wins, and you know the new net rankings kind of support that approach. You know, it is nice that there are games that are you know, scheduled by the conference against some of the other leagues, so that Texas has that. The Gonzaga game was you know, set up a few years ago. Originally they were supposed to play it during the COVID season in 2020. So that got pushed back. Beard didn't have anything to do with that. So all the best games really on the conference schedule, he didn't have anything to do with. You know, we'll see if they, you know, schedule a marquee non-conference opponent moving forward, a home and home series against a program like Gonzaga. That would be my hope that they would have at least one. You know, that tended to be how Texas scheduled in the past of trying to have, you know, one of those marquee home and home series in the non-conference every year. And that, you know, to me should be, you know, the lowest the bar goes for Chris Beard, but we'll find out more about that next year.
And for women's basketball too, also playing in an exhibition match, beat a tournament team with an All-American on it. DePaul scored 105 points, gave up just 62. Fick Schaefer's got another really good ball club this year. I think they're going to be better than they were last year. Roy Harmon, just an outstanding guard, only at 3 points, and you still score 105 points. Didn't have their entire team either. A few people were not active, including the grad transfer, or just a transfer, Taylor Jones from Oregon State. I don't think Femi Asuti played. Kendall Hunter didn't play. Did Amina? Yeah, Amina Muhammad, she played. But I think it's going to be a really good year for both basketball programs. But I think this women's basketball team, I mean, obviously it's special, and Fick Schaefer's coaching ability, there's a reason why CDC went out and got him.
yeah, that's an impressive exhibition performance. You know, given a fair amount of turnover on the roster as well. That's, you know, both of those basketball programs, it seems like there's going to be a fair amount of turnover of players, but, you know, Vic Schaefer, as Chris Beard, you know, has done this year and in the past, doing some good work, getting players out of the portal.
Yeah. And one of those players, Sonya Morris from DePaul, actually, she's a guard, 5'10". She had 21 yesterday. Yeah, she had 21. She's outstanding too. So the backcourt with her and Roy Harmon and then Kendall Hunter being able to come off the bench, really exciting. And Shea Holly too. She's like Brock Cunningham on steroids. I mean, her ability to run the floor, she's terrific on defense and has the ability to shoot from deep too. So exciting.
Oh, a fellow Westlake product, right?
Yeah, both Westlake. That's correct. So if you have a chance to get out there, even if you want to see the Moody Center, I encourage you to take in a women's basketball game. And they got a really good non-conference schedule. Princeton's coming to town, South Florida as well. And then a few other teams. I think who else does he have scheduled here real quick? Connecticut's on the road, unfortunately. And then they play in the battle for Atlantis down in the Bahamas against Marquette and a few other teams. But they're going to be a fun team to watch this year.
Right.
All right. Wednesday, we'll be back to preview Kansas State. Westcott will have his preview out there as well. If you got any questions for us, hit us up on the Burn Orange Nation Twitter account or reply in the comments of this post. Westcott, cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
Winning's hard. Really, really hard.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.